Good afternoon, everyone. This is a session on New South Wales and ACT CTP. Confession to make, I grew up in Canberra, and it's always and ACT. So we're going to do it a bit different, let ACT go first and be the larger partner for this. So what I'll do is I'll introduce Karen Doran. Karen is the Executive Director of the Economic and Finance Group within the ACT Treasury. Karen also currently holds the appointed statutory role within the ACT Regulator and for Lifetime Care and Support Commissioner. Karen has broad experience around across areas of public policy and in developing and implementing regulatory frameworks. Her experience spans both public and private. Prior to the current role, Karen has worked with the Commonwealth Department of Finance, International Association of Insurance Supervisors, and with APRA. She commenced a career in the insurance and financial sector, working with a number of insurance companies and actuarial consulting firms. So what I'll do is I'll give it to Karen. What we might do is get them both to speak, and then we'll do questions afterwards. So away you go. Oh, okay.
Thanks, Tom. It's just that one. Yeah. Okay, thank you. Good afternoon, all. So my objective today is just to give you a quick snapshot on the state of the ACT-CTP scheme and to talk through some of the recent changes and challenges that we've experienced. I think it's fair to say that the ACT scheme has not changed significantly in its fundamental structure since about 2008, although we have attempted some reform, but with little success. It's a scheme that is largely based on the New South Wales scheme, though perhaps pre its last round of reform. In 2008, a regulatory framework was instituted around what was at that stage a monopoly insurance arrangement, although a private monopoly rather than a government monopoly. That regulatory framework really sets the legislative structure for our scheme, brought in some objectives which I think are framed slightly differently to what we've heard in earlier sessions today from Jeff Atkins, where he coined the objectives of regulation very simply as being to maintain the sustainability of a scheme. But we have objectives which, while they have the same incentive or the same fundamental objective, I think were reflect, I suppose, the context of our scheme at that stage being a monopoly arrangement. Went into things like promoting competition, keeping insurance costs affordable, obviously the healthcare objectives. So just looking at the characteristics of our scheme under that framework, the ACT scheme design or benefit design it's probably somewhat different to most schemes at the moment in that it's a fault-based scheme, but it's an unlimited common law scheme, and it's probably in that area where it's sitting differently to many of the CTP schemes at the moment. So there are no thresholds, there's no defined benefits, and as a consequence, it's providing, a broader range of coverage potentially a more expensive form of scheme. And this is reflected in the higher premiums that we experience in our scheme, as shown there. So just marginally, second highest premiums in Australia. The ACT, as you're probably aware, sits as an island within New South Wales. In terms of direct comparison to some of the areas that sit on our borders, because of the risk rating structures within the New South Wales scheme, our premiums actually sit very high compared to those particular areas, the Queanbeyans and the like. In terms of affordability, ironically, our scheme rates fairly well, but that hides the fact that we have a very high income level in the ACT, so it's really distorting the affordability of the scheme in that sense, or the pure price of the scheme in that sense. In terms of claims experience, this one's still on premium levels. So in terms of premium experience over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen increasing premiums, which is a reflection of the claims experience, which I'll get to in a moment. This has put pressure on the scheme and brought pressure from the government in terms of affordability of what is a statutory arrangement. It was because of this in 2011-12 we did look to try and bring forward some reforms to the scheme and bring in some of the benefit restrictions, thresholds, some of those benefit features, but we were unable to get those through our processes at the time. You'll see in the last year, 14-15, on the chart, we have had a reduction in premiums, and this is a feature of a couple of the changes that we've had in the scheme, which I'll talk to in more detail around competition and also the introduction of a lifetime care scheme or a catastrophic injury scheme. So just quickly, the claims experience that sits behind that premium pattern, again, as has been talked about by Andrew in an earlier session, we're seeing the same pressures on escalating average claims costs within the ACT scheme, largely coming through the common law features of that scheme. And if you look behind the figures, we can often see a very significant legal cost component of that. Okay, and that chart just shows the breakup of some of those costs. And again, over time, you can see that the component that's growing most significantly is in the legal costs and in the general damages or the common law components of the scheme. The treatment and care costs, of course, which is the fundamental purpose of the scheme, you may say, is a very a relatively small component of where the premiums are going. So while we haven't been able to bring in comprehensive reform in the CTP arrangements in the ACT, we have had some changes in the system, which have had some beneficial impacts on premium structures. Competition was a significant change which came into place in 2013, where we had three new brands enter the market. The scheme has never been intentionally a monopoly arrangement. It's always been open to competition, but being a small market and being a market that had a monopoly operator, it is difficult to get the competition into the market. So that's been a really good change, and a change that's brought some real impacts on the scheme arrangements. I'll talk in more detail through these changes as we go through, but just to highlight them now, we've recently in the ACT brought in a regulatory framework for rideshare arrangements, so Uber-style arrangements. And that's had some interesting impacts on our CTP scheme, which I thought I'd just talk through quickly. And as I've mentioned already, implemented a catastrophic injury scheme on 1 July 2014, which took some elements of claim out of the CTP arena. So looking at the impacts of competition, as I said, three brands entered the market, all under the AAI Limited group. So we've got GIO, Apia and AAMI. Came in July 2013. In about the first 12 months of operation, they won a 10% market share. And now, after nearly 2 years, their market share has increased to close to, I think it's 23-24%. We've seen some interesting impacts as competition has played out in the market. Initially, while there was downward pressure on price, that was initially not the the main driver of how the various firms looked to compete. So the competition was through what you might call indirect arrangements, so through rebate offerings or through bundling of products, and through innovative benefit features within their products, such as at-fault driver benefits. In the last 12 months, I think it's fair to say that we've seen quite direct price competition. We've had, I think it's three now, possibly four, sort of leapfrogging of price reductions, multiple premium filings as the competing firms jostle for having that lowest premium. And it has been proven that our market is very price sensitive. So as you watch the market share figures, they significantly change with whoever has the lowest premium at the time. I think, you know, in a regulatory sense, in a framework that is a statutory scheme that is running on a community rating principle, fundamentally, these sorts of elements of competition have really challenged the regulator in thinking through some of the ways in which the structures work. The role of relativities in our structure, the extent to which firms can risk rate within a community rating structure. And I think right at the moment, when you have too much competition, so downward pressure on premiums is good, but you know, premium stability is also an important feature of the scheme, and at the moment we're seeing premiums changing every few months. So I think there's some of the you know, the regulatory challenges that have come from this change within our scheme. Just moving on to ride sharing. The ACT government took a decision to want to support ride sharing within our market, and so have established a regulatory framework to make ride sharing legal within the ACT. That framework started on the 30th of October. That framework covers, you know, the whole range of regulation around, you know, how you well, define ride-sharing in the first instance, what types of vehicles you allow to participate in this, what licensing requirements, safety requirements on drivers and cars, etc., you put in place. But, of course, another important component of the whole framework was insurance arrangements. And in that area, we necessarily looked at our CTP arrangements for catering for ride-share. Now, this is, I think it's fair to say, this is an area where we're still just beginning, and there's probably, you know, more thinking to be done and more learnings to be had. But we found initially that the somewhat prescriptive structure, I suppose, we had in terms of premium ratings within the ACT with defined vehicle classes and relativities provided a somewhat, well, let's say it wasn't as agile as maybe you would want it to be as you're looking at a new innovation in the market such as ride sharing. So within our premium ratings, we had the normal passenger vehicle class. We had a relativity for taxis. We also had a class for hire vehicles. But none of those classes fitted perfectly the definition of rideshare as it was being developed for operation in the ACT. So we're necessarily going down a path now of looking at establishing a new class for rideshare vehicles. That brings up issues in terms of relativity to the classes that exist already. It also highlights issues of how you establish a premium rating framework for these classes where you have limited data, where in the ACT we have a small market anyway, and where you are necessarily going to bring the sorts of comparisons and pressures between the taxis, hire vehicles and ride shares as they look to understand why they're getting a different rating within that structure. So we're very much at the start of that process, but even in getting it started, we needed to make regulations to establish a new class, and we've needed to ask our insurers to refile premiums to put in a relativity and a rating for this new rideshare class. Thank you. I think the last thing I just wanted to touch on quickly was the introduction of the catastrophic injury scheme. So this scheme commenced on 1 July 2014 in the ACT. We've had terrific support from New South Wales, which I'd like to acknowledge here in setting up that scheme and also now in a formal arrangement for administering the claims under that scheme. Again, as a small jurisdiction in the ACT, I think you know, this scheme is going to bring continuous challenges for us in terms of determining levies and determining liabilities for the scheme. Unfortunately, and fortunately, in our first year of operation, we had five catastrophic injuries, so we have five interim members of the scheme. Our original estimates were for somewhere between 4 to 6 a year, so it was not a good first year. The scheme is no fault, and that was a part of the estimation process that was new to us, our CTP arrangements being at fault, so we're learning how many people ride motorbikes in the ACT. But I think, again, those issues around the volatility and managing liabilities, volatile liabilities in a small scheme, it will be an interesting area going forward. I might just leave it there. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. A combination of my eyes and the fact that Michael's already spoken twice today, I won't introduce Michael, but I'll hand to Michael to New South Wales. Andrew. Don't know if that's how bad my eyes are. Sorry, Andrew.
Thank you. Fred. Good afternoon, everyone. It is my third gig. I stood between you and morning tea, you and lunch. I stand now between you and afternoon tea. And I need a coffee. Okay, I'll perhaps fly through some of the data performance and talk about, to get quickly to our main issues at the moment in New South Wales CTP. And I should hasten to add that there was a question asked of me coming in today whether I was covering lifetime care in this, and the answer is no, I'm not. That will be covered in another session tomorrow, I think. Okay, so some immediate changes. Many of you would be aware that we are now part of the state insurance regulatory authority. We're no longer the Motor Accidents Authority. And that happened on the 1st of September, so we're 9 weeks into being CIRA. But for all intents and purposes, the functions that I lead within CIRA is the same as the MAA functions, and we continue to govern the same legislation. So the only thing that's really substantively changed for us is the name of the agency in the legislation. However, for other lines of insurance, there were significant changes, structural changes, as well as new roles, regulatory roles that were created in the new CIRA. So we probably came through the CIRA experience the least impacted of any of the agencies, because essentially it was really a change in name, but no change in terms of our approach, our regulatory model, and if anything, the regulatory model that's being adopted across CIRA is really leveraging off the work that we've been doing in the MAA. So I put on the road again, because it feels like it's some of the same trends that I talked about last time and probably the time before that. Our challenges remain scheme efficiency and affordability, claims frequency and propensity, and particularly claims frequency, which I'll come back to you. But for those who are at this morning's session, you would have seen that that's something I've already touched on, and the continued concern about how long it takes to get benefits paid to people. I guess in terms of the headlines, everything's going up, pretty much since 2008. So there was a real sort of watershed moment in the scheme in 2008, where after nearly a decade of most of the metrics in the scheme running in the right direction, we've sort of seen a turn. And you'll see this in a number of the graphs that you'll see coming up. They all have this same U-shape, where in around the sort of global financial crisis period, everything started to turn. So we saw more and more claims coming into the system. That's largely because of increases in propensity rather than it being increases in the number of people who are being injured, although serious injury rates are actually up a little bit in New South Wales. we're seeing some costs in the scheme going up, so some injury types are pushing some of those costs, psychological injury, care, etc. And we've had an ongoing challenge around the underlying efficiency of the scheme, with more being spent on legal professionals than medical and related treatment costs in the scheme now for most of the last 10 years. And insurer profit has continued to be a hot topic in the New South Wales public domain, and I'll have a little bit more to say about that later on. And we continue to see the majority of payments being made in the 3 to 5 year mark after the date of accident. Although this is really a story about claims and claims growth, we should also recognise that since 2008, low yield rates bit and continue to bite, and there seems to be no prospect and no end to the capacity of interest rates to go down. So although I have a mortgage, I probably groan every time I hear the Reserve Bank is wanting to adjust interest rates again. So we've got kind of like multiple hits on the scheme all happening at the same time. So I'll just go through a few graphs, as I say, very quickly. This is what's been happening in terms of market share. The main thing that you'll notice there is particularly in the last few years, quite a significant growth of QBE, which is the green line that's running, sort of the lime line running through the middle, largely at the expense of NRMA, which is the red line. Some deterioration in Allianz, which is the Allianz Group, which is two of our licences as well, although that's been pretty stable, I have to say, since around 2010. So the big story in the last couple of years has been quite a marked shift in market shares in our scheme. And just in the last 12 months, we've started to see the Suncorp Group, particularly AAMI, which you can't kind of see AAMI in that mix there, which is the purple along the top, growing quite a bit. So we've had a period where I would have to say in the last 2 years a greater level of competitiveness in the market compared to what we had seen in the previous, say, 5 to 10 years. A lot of price competition and some jostling around who was the best price in the market. And I think that was the first time we'd had some real outbreaks of competition since the 2008 sort of battened down the hatches and let's just try to ride out the global financial crisis and all the challenges of yield rates. And that, you'll see, is starting to have an impact on what's happening to premiums. There are other factors. Our own levy is part of that. In 14-15, we introduced new premium guidelines. But by and large, you can also see that there are the effects of competition. So although we've had this underlying push-up in cost, particularly claims cost, which doesn't seem to be going away, we've had a couple of relatively benign years in terms of price. You can actually see that the prices dropped very slightly, but the blue line going down shows the measure against average weekly earnings. And so in real terms, greenslip prices have been getting better since 2013 when they sort of reached a real peak, which hadn't been previously seen since the early 2000s. So what have we got to worry about? Not a lot, until we turn to the claims graph. And claims, you know, it's not a great story. You can have a look at the number of notifications that are coming into the system. It's a little bit hard to read, and I think I've got another graph coming up that's a little bit easier to see. But you'll see that there was sort of a low point there in around that 05-07 period, around just over 10,000 notifications. And when we look at the 13-14 year, that was up about 14.5. And if we go through to, if we fast forward sort of into 2015, that's even higher again. I don't think I've got the figure here with me, but it's certainly getting up sort of around the 15,000 type mark. So, I mean, that's a serious and significant increase. In fact, the rate of growth since 2008, it's an average of a 1.5% growth per quarter in that period, just as sort of a sustained push upwards. But what we've seen is that that this trend sort of is accelerating. So in the last couple of years, this is going up, and I think I've got a graph to come to that. For the first time in a long time, we saw the number of notifications in 2013 go over 4,000 in number, and we're getting to around nearly 4,300 notifications per quarter as at the end of June this year. And unfortunately, the September figures, which came in after I did this, are even higher. Okay, so that's showing that trend graphically. The one on the right is showing all notifications. So we've got claims frequency for full claims on the left, ANFs in the middle. So those who know our scheme would know that we have a thing called an accident notification form, which is an early payment for anyone, irrespective of fault, up to $5,000. And then you can start to see what's happening when we combine them. And you can see that U-shape effect in around 2008. And claims frequency has been creeping up, but the real story of why it's going up is that dark blue line that's above it, which is the propensity to claim. So we were below nearly 40% rate there in that boom period around 2008. And now we're up around 70% propensity to claim. So that's a really big increase in propensity to claim from a pretty low base, and that's putting a lot of pressure. So propensity to claim means that this is not more casualties, this is more people who could make a claim are choosing to come in and make a claim. We've been conducting an investigation into that. There are some unusual trends emerging and as to some of the reasons for that upswing. Mostly it's low-severity legally represented claims that have been going up dramatically and showing no sign of stopping. So if we look at the last financial year, there was something like a 25% increase in low-severity legally represented claims in one 12-month period. Altogether, it's probably something like a 15% increase in claims overall, but most of that's being driven by the low-end claims with lawyers. Although that's reducing average claim sizes, as you would expect, mathematically, in terms of the gross cost of the scheme, it's obviously adding a lot more expense to the scheme. And it seems every quarter when we look at our quarterly data, there's no end to this trend line. A lot of these claims, this sort of rapid increase started in some suburbs of Sydney, mainly in the southwestern parts of Sydney. but frankly, what we're starting to see now in the figures is that's growing beyond that. And so it seems like it's kind of a snowball effect that's happening. And as I was saying at this morning's session for those who are at it, it's multiple causes, which also means that it's a multi-dimensional solution for us going forward about how we will address it. And I'll come back to that in my final sum up. This is the reasonably mature data around how scheme funds have been distributed. So just over 51% of the funds since the reforms were established have found their way in direct claimant benefits. But that's before legal expenses go out that we don't see. In other words, the part that's not regulated. And so one of the things that we've got just going live last month, 1st of October, is we now have full cost disclosure from legal professionals who now need to report to us how much their costs were and to tell us what the cash in hand was for the injured person after all disbursements and legal costs went out. So it's only early days yet. That's only 5 weeks. We're already getting some rather interesting data out of that. I think when we come and report this in the next scheme update, that yellow box, that yellow half, will be a lot less than a half, I suspect. By a lot, I dare say. I won't dwell on this. This is really just showing heads of damage over the last little while. Reasonably stable. It's masking the fact that care, if you take it right back to 2000, has actually been a real growth area, particularly gratuitous care. But I might just move on in the interests of time. Public health costs are rising, so on top of everything else, public hospital costs have been rising for us as well, so like everything's going north. That's resulted in us having to put our levy up slightly on green slips. But when we take that into account with some decreases in the lifetime care levy, in net terms, the overall rates have been going down for the levy. But for our part of it, and we fund all the public hospital and ambulance services, sadly those costs are also going through the roof at the moment. So it feels like we're getting it from multiple directions. So to summarise, our priorities at the moment as a regulator come in a few areas. I guess overall scheme stability and sustainability is our number one priority. Outbreak of reasonably flat prices we don't think will be sustained if that claims growth story continues. And so as a result, one of our number one priorities is the second item there, which is claims growth. And claims growth is a mix of both strategies around claims leakage and working with insurers around claims practices, but it's also looking at fraud or exaggeration or over-servicing or any of the other range of possible things that could be driving it. It's being supported by a rewrite of our claims guidelines, which is a major consultative effort we've got at the moment going on with insurers, coming on the back of major reviews of our premium guidelines and our market practice guidelines over the last 2 years. I won't go into great detail about the last two-year program. Some of you would have heard my presentation earlier today that kind of summarised that. Profits, I mentioned profits continues to be an issue. Our parliamentary committee recommended a review, which we are in the processes of getting finalised, an independent review. It will lead to a wholesale review of the premium system, looking at the way the cross-subsidies work and looking at how they might work more efficiently and picking up some of the recommendations of the profit review, which at this stage has not yet been through a government process, but I think it will lead to changes in the regulatory model, but also a significant review of the premium system coming up in the next 12 months. We're putting a lot of effort into improvements that are actually about improving customer services, so the experience for vehicle owners when they purchase their green slips separate to their registration transaction, and looking at ways we can improve that. But also more that we as a regulator can do in terms of direct support of injured people and through our relationship with insurers, developing approaches that put a more customer-centric focus on what we do. Now, importantly, customer-centric is not the same as being an advocate for claimants. This came up in another talk today where there is a real difference between a regulator playing a role in helping to navigate, which is different to being an advocate. And I think that that's an important distinction. Finally, we've been on a journey of embedding a risk-based regulatory framework and in particular building better databases. There's more work that we need to do in that area. There's no change to our regulatory approach at the moment with these other changes. If anything, as I say, they're going to be adopted in other parts of the business, and so I think that's here to stay in terms of our approach as a regulator. So I think that takes me to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew. We've got about 4 minutes for some questions. There's a microphone there for one, either, or both. So if anyone's got any questions to jump up. I'll start. Four insurers, six licences, two insurers, four licences. What do you think competition looks like in 3 to 5 years' time? Different schemes, different experiences.
Wow. Hello, is that working?
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I think that if you look around the general insurance market at the moment, there probably aren't a lot of other insurers that are out there. There might be a couple that have the scale. One of the challenges in entering our market is that you have to write all comers, so that kind of knocks out a lot of insurers that might want to do niche products. And also you need to have a certain sort of capital base as well as expertise in claims management, rehab advice and so on. So that's not the sort of thing you just go and lightly take on. So at the moment I'm not sensing that, although there are probably two or three players out there that might have the scale to enter the market at some point, I'm not sure that there's sort of a big push for that. So I think we've been in a fairly stable period in the way the market has kind of found its groove. It's probably not ideal, and part of what our profit review has been looking at is also market competition and more we can do as a regulator and give advice to government as well around legislative changes that might prompt those couple of general insurers that are off to the side of the market that may want to come into the market. So explicitly we've looked at what are ways of lowering barriers to entry. So we'd be delighted to see some new entrants, but we've had a lot of consolidation in the insurance industry over the last few years, and so I'm not sure that we're going to sort of suddenly see a whole lot more people coming into the market, but ACT might be different.
Thanks. I don't know that we really are different. I guess other than the fact that at the moment we have less insurers than are playing in New South Wales, so there's perhaps some scope there for some of those players to come into the ACT market, given the similarities between scheme design at the moment. I guess our challenge, though, is one of pure scale. It's a very small market and a question of how much competition it can bear. What is a viable market share for players to even look to enter?
I'm watching everyone dash towards the microphone. Oh, here we go. Thanks, Estelle.
Estelle Pearson. Andrew, you touched on this morning. If this increase in claims is people just coming forward and making claims who haven't previously claimed on the scheme, realistically, is there anything that the regulator can actually do? Or do we just have to get used to having a higher level of premium because more people are now accessing the scheme and they have a right to?
Good question. In these four walls, if it's Chatham House rules, I'm not sure that all of the people are people that can make a claim. So, as a regulator, we have to be careful, I suppose, in terms of our public statements, because at the end of the day, people are exercising their rights. That then forms part of our advice back to government. So, the way the sort of the separation of powers works is that the Parliament determines the legislation. Citizens are then entitled to access those services. And the regulator makes sure that that happens appropriately and effectively. And if that cost is too great for the Parliament or the community, then it needs to work out sort of the way it goes forward. Part of our review with insurers is to really try to identify and split out the nature of the problem. And I suspect it's actually a number of causes and a number of different features of the current environment that are driving some of those claims up. And I think if we take some action on multiple fronts, it'll probably start to push some of those away, because some of them are very, very small claims. Some of them are claims that have fairly hard-to-believe statements about the nature of the injury. Some are actually making claims and saying they've had no injuries, but they're still putting in a claim. So, you know, you've got to kind of wonder what's going on out there in terms of the culture. But it's a, you know, if you've got a snowball effect, it's something that won't, you know, be turned around overnight. But if it is legitimate claims, then and people are making that cost, that's a problem for the Parliament, not the problem for the regulator.
Okay, I think I heard the afternoon tea bell. I've got a bottle of wine for Karen. Andrew, there's a two-bottle limit, so I'm sorry, I'm going to have to take that one. But can you thank both our speakers?